Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing this week?
Great, Jimmy. How are you? Did you enjoy your whiteout? Sorry. That wasn't a whiteout. I'm sorry. That was a whiteout energy. I'm being cynical, but it was, the atmosphere definitely had something to do with the result of that football game. And did you enjoy it?
I did, Andy. We had an absolutely phenomenal tailgate.
Cool.
So with the night game, it was like all day. The game was the energy. To use James Franklin's term, it was whiteout energy, and it was kind of nice to see it not be quite as planned as the normal whiteout. It was a little more impromptu, a little more spontaneous, which I think there was an extra element because of that. It was fun that way. And I got to tell you, and I've mentioned this on shows earlier in the week, I loved that James Franklin, in his post-game press conference, actually used a statistic to quantify the whiteout. I think it was 7 plays where the crowd had an effect. So it's smart on his part for him to give credit to the fans, let the fans think, hey, we're having an effect on this game. We're going to know that for the next time.
So that wasn't an accident, Jimmy. That wasn't impromptu. That was planned. I'm 300% sure. James had somebody counting him. He had parameters for what it has to be, and he got the number like 19 seconds after the game was over, and he shook Brett Bielema's hand. Because that's smart marketing, and that's really smart public relations. It's just really smart. I know it impacted the game. I know the crowd had an impact at times on Illinois. I don't think it was to the level James wants you to believe it was, but I do believe it did have an impact.
Well, it doesn't matter, Andy, if he kind of exaggerates the impact a bit. It doesn't matter. He's got the fans feeling that they are part of the event, which makes the fans excited and happy. And the fact is, it does affect the opponent, and that's helpful to James. It's helpful to the program. It's helpful for the individual games. And you still also, Andy, I saw a couple quotes from recruits that were there. The recruits are just bowled over by this atmosphere. They love it. And for years now, when you hear recruits being asked why they decided to commit to Penn State, as often as not, they will point out the whiteout game.
Oh, yeah. You'll see opponents. You'll see that, you know, if they ask an NFL guy, you know, where was your favorite place to play in college, right? Like, where, if they were in the Big Ten, you know, you can find guys all over the internet talking about the first time they played in Penn State and if it was a whiteout or a night game, like what that was like from their perspective. So it is, and it's part of sort of in the James Franklin era, night games at Penn State are sort of a signature part of the era. So now all they got to do is make the playoffs, right? Like, that's it. They just make sure that the product on the field matches all of the stuff that's going on around it and off the field.
And Andy, they don't just need to make the playoffs. They need to get a home game for the playoffs and make it a night game. That's what they really need, Andy.
They just need to make the playoffs, Jimmy.
I get that. I get that. But for the fans, boy, to get a home playoff game, Andy, could you imagine what that atmosphere is going to be like?
If it's a night game, it'll be different than a day game. I'm not sure I don't know if Penn State has a say in what time the game would start if they did have a home game. But either way, yeah, it would be more fun at night. It'd be freezing freaking cold. I think it would be it's tough in December in Pennsylvania.
It can be. It can be very tough, but I think Penn State fans would take that on. And you know what? Especially in the winter, Andy, it gets dark early enough that you could do that for, you know, a 4 o'clock game also.
Absolutely.
And get the similar effect. And if I'm the TV people, I'm saying an opportunity at Penn State to get a night game, I'm scheduling Penn State at night.
I would think they would. Yes.
I think it would just be smart programming. Anyway, Andy, let's talk a little bit of actual football. I want to start with the running backs, Andy. Catron Allen, Nick Singleton, they were tremendous. And I want to specifically point out the physicality of these two guys, Andy. They punish the defense. The defense doesn't punish them. It's the other way.
So it's kind of been like this all year. This is starting to become a couple. It is not starting. It is becoming rapidly. It's basically a couple of NFL quality backs they're in full bloom in terms of showcasing their unique individual talents and their abilities as a dynamic duo. Both of them, their individual talents and their sort of in tandem as a dynamic duo, what they can do, that is really, really starting to come through and show itself. And I'm convinced more than ever, it looked like it right from the jump that this offense is built around, it's sort of built around the running back. Everybody plays a role, but what is the sort of emphasis of this offense? What's their plan? What's their purpose, right? One of the things we talked about ad nauseum last year was, I don't know what the plan and purpose for this offense is. That is not a concern anymore, JG. We know exactly what this Penn State offense is, and it starts with 10, and it starts with 13. That's where it starts. Everything else is a little spoke off the wheel, including quarterback Drew Aller. But it starts with these two running backs. They're bigger, stronger, faster. I think they were last year. And even the little elements, blocking in space, staying in and blocking for their quarterback, right? Little things like that. Making a first guy miss. Just little bitty things that weren't coming as frequently or naturally a year ago. Because I really think the duo was hamstrung by the offense. I'm just going to say it. I think Mike Yersich put those guys back in a genie bottle somehow. I don't know how he did it. I think that's kind of hard, but I think he shoved them back in a genie bottle. But all of that little stuff is starting to become more noticeable. Physicality, you brought it up, Jimmy. Like, they are punishing runners. Guess what, Jimmy? Even as freshmen, if you think about it, you're like, you know what? They were kind of pretty good in punishing back then, but we really didn't know what we were looking at. And now you're seeing it in full bloom, Jimmy, all of it at the very high. Both these guys are going to the NFL at the end of this year. They're done playing college football. This is their last year of college football. There's absolutely no reason for them to ever play another down of college football after this season. And Andy has unlocked them and brought them back out of the genie bottle. Not only did he do that, he's made them the centerpiece of this offense. And they are not a running offense. They are not a 3-yard cloud of dust offense. I say that I don't want to misdiagnosis and say, well, Penn State is a running team. They're not, Jimmy. But the focus and the plan and purpose of this offense starts and centers around 10 and 13.
Well, they're at the very least the starting point. And Andy, I just got to say, when you said about Mike Yersich holding them back, it reminds me there was the old story of Michael Jordan. The only person who was able to hold him under 20 points was Dean Smith, his own coach, right, at North Carolina. And it's kind of the same thing here. Now, you say they're not a quote-unquote running team, but here are the numbers from this game against Illinois. They ran the ball, Andy, 44 times. They threw the ball 21 times. They may not be a running team, but they're a pretty good running team.
No, they're not. When I say they're not a running team, I don't mean they're limited to their offense being successful, being predicated on being able to run the football, right? That's what I picture when I say a running team. I don't think this Penn State offense is predicated to being successful strictly on running the ball. I think when they run the ball, the offense functions better and they become an even stronger offense all around. Because they still have a really darn good quarterback, Jimmy, who's performing well. And I think that's the thing you don't have to – you're not – there's going to be a time when they're going to need to do it, and he's going to need to shine at a brighter and different level. And this is preparing him to be able to do that instead of him having to do that week after week after week. These running backs are unlocking a lot of good offensively. And the only thing – I mean, against Illinois – and Illinois, I thought Illinois' defense played pretty darn well. I really do. I don't think they were, you know, they weren't soft. They weren't, you know, making mistakes. I think tactically they were in good positions. I think Penn State was just better. The only thing close about that game was the scoreboard. Otherwise, they completely and totally dominated that game. And Illinois will play a football game that keeps the score down. Penn State was never going to run away and win that game 42-7, 49-7. You know what I mean? But that's a little bit what it felt like to me. At least they were totally dominating that football game. It just stayed close on the scoreboard, which is what Illinois does well and how they had beat two ranked teams when they played them already this season in their first four games.
You're right. That's what Illinois wants to do. They want to be physical, tough, limit the number of possessions, which I think made the Penn State running game all that much more impressive.
Yep.
Because Penn State was the more physical team. And Andy, if there was one play that encapsulated it, it was a play where Nick Singleton caught a little swing pass and he ran over the defender. Really impressive, very physical. And he ran over the defender to get the first down. However, perhaps the more impressive part of the play, which might have gotten lost by a lot of people, is before he came out of the backfield, he chipped. He chipped a defender. Well, Andy, his chipping the defender at the line of scrimmage, he pancaked him.
He flattened him. It's rare I come jumping out of my chair when I see something. I saw that block live. And I literally was like, oh my gosh, he flattened that guy. And because at the same time I'm jumping out of my chair, he's catching the swing pass.
Yeah, very impressive play by Nick Singleton on that one. One that makes him a fan favorite. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter number one. We got lots more to go. Stay tuned.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking Penn State football. And Andy, we spent quarter number one, besides talking about the whiteout, talking about the Penn State running game. And I just want to be careful. We talked quite a bit about Nick Singleton, especially that specific play. He flattened someone at the line of scrimmage, caught a pass, then flattened another defender. Is Catron Allen sometimes get lost in all of this? But he's the guy who is so consistent. And the comment about him all the way back to when he was a freshman was he will fall forward. He will turn a 2-yard gain into a 4-yard gain. A 6-yard gain into a 9 or 10 yard gain. And he still does that, Andy. And he had, in this Illinois game, he had a 100-yard gain and rushed for almost 6 yards per carry.
So you're 100% correct, Jimmy, but I want to say there's one other thing, and you can look at this going forward, Penn State fans. He's the same Catron Allen, right? Since two years ago that you saw as a freshman, you're correct. But he's added something. He's making more guys miss, and he's seeing the green better, right? Like he's making better first cuts, or his first move if he cuts through a hole is much more clean, concise, and it's just got more savvy to it. In other words, he's adding some yards to his own per carry just by him being better. And then now he's doing exactly what you want to do at the end, which is hitting somebody and going forward generally. So I think I've seen in these first four games that he's sort of the difference maker to me, because he is significantly better as a running back. I don't think Nick Singleton is any different other than being more consistent of what you saw his first year. You get to see more of it. That's what you needed to do for this offense to be successful. I think Catron Allen as a back, just a pure running guy through the hole and then being good at the second level, he's found that. Nick Singleton already had it. He had it all along, right? Like you could see that. Nick Singleton has developed that, and that is a big, big difference maker for me, because I think he's turning 3, 2, 3, and 4 yard runs into 7, 8, and 9 yard runs. Big difference.
Yep, they are very impressive, and the team seems to make a point of balancing the load between the two. This Illinois game, Catron Allen 18 carries, Nick Singleton 16. Plus, Nick Singleton had 2 receptions. So, in essence, each one of them touched the ball 18 times. That's a good thing. Neither one of them is going to get overloaded. And come time to go to the NFL, there's not so much tread on the tires. Real quick, go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, don't forget all of this. And we need to talk about the running backs like we've been. Don't forget, the offensive line had injuries and had a bunch of changes to make through the course of that game because of guys going in and out and moving guys around. By the end of the game, Cooper Cousins was playing guard. That's just how it played out in that game against Illinois. And they dominated the line of scrimmage no matter what sort of, you know, it was a little bit of, you know, it was just a little bit of sideways. And it didn't show in any way, shape, or form. Don't forget about that moving forward, Jimmy.
They played very well against a tough Illinois team where the fear is how you do at the line of scrimmage. Another thing, Andy, and we've seen it now the last couple games, it seems like Tyler Warren as a wildcat quarterback is here to stay.
Yeah, it's part of the package, right? Like you this is what you were always kind of wondering, because it was what he brought to Penn State was sort of this. He's a little bit of a mad scientist, Andy Kotelnicki, in terms of sort of the eye candy and what he makes your eyes do as a defender before the ball is snapped with what he has going on. And it was clear in, you know, right from the jump that Bo Prabula had a role to play in this offense. Now it is clear that there is a package and a role other than being a stud tight end that they will use and is going to be part of their planning and purpose. It's going to center around Tyler Warren handling the ball different than you might expect from a normal tight end. I think this is here to stay as part of the offense. The funny thing for me is it's different, right? Because it's number 44 and he's a tight end. He's a big athletic dude. It's different than Bo Prabula. But if you kind of look at it, it's just eye candy. It's exactly kind of the same sets in terms of blocking and what the offensive line does and sort of what they're trying, what they do with him, you know, a little RPO. Maybe Tyler's a little more inside than the outside guy like Bo is. But at the base of it, it's still the same with all this eye candy around you and a super crazy stud athlete that looks very comfortable doing it. It's the same stuff as a Prabula package, essentially, basically. But it's just to add Tyler Warren in and just no more throwing. That's all I ask. I don't want to see any more passing out of it. But I think there's a lot of options for it. And he looks smooth. That's the thing. Former high school quarterback, and he looks comfortable doing it. And no wonder Andy's using it. He found it, and he's like, why not? Why not?
And Andy, I think the comparison to the Bo package is important to make. It's different in that you've got such a huge guy doing it. So when he runs, plus I think he added another element with that leap into the end zone. That was like about a 3-yard leap. It makes you say, okay, this might be a real good, you know, 4th-and-1 package with a guy that big and that strong. But some of the other elements that I think you alluded to was, remember, I guess it was Tommy Stevens, when he came in, there were like literally 17 consecutive plays where he came in and he ran the ball, okay? Here you have a situation where it is a package where he has given it up to the running back, where you can't just focus on him. And Andy, when making that handoff, it's a read option play where he has the option to keep it himself or give it up to the running back. His decision-making has been very, very good at that.
So you like the athletic leap, and you should, right? Like I liked it too. I was like, whoa, that's crazy. Football, the football guy in me loved the mesh point and the read and how smooth he made it look on the touchdown run where he sucked the defensive end in by holding the ball. That's not really coachable in a tight end, Jimmy. You have to know, understand, and feel that. And he read it like a seasoned veteran and executed it perfectly. I mean, sucked that defensive end right to the point where it was like, oh, man. And he knew the defensive end knew he'd gone to the wrong aisle to pay for his groceries, right? Like, he's like, oh, you could kind of see it. Like, I bought it, right? I was sucked in. That's Tyler Warren. That is sneaky, sneaky good stuff right there, Jimmy. That mesh point and reading with his eyes and the ability to sort of hold it before he let it go, and it was an easy touchdown run. That's not easy, Jimmy. That's next level stuff.
And that's the exact point of the play, Andy, is to sucker the guy in and force him to make a decision, whichever decision he makes, he's wrong. And Tyler Warren, by not panicking, by holding it there, that extra beat, he's able to say, look, who are you going to go after? You've got to commit one way or the other. Whichever way you commit, we're going the other way. Very well done. Very well done by Tyler Warren. And the one place where I'll go the other way, I want to see him throw the ball again, Andy.
No.
I want to see it.
No, that left-handed – I'm a lefty, and I like lefty. They have a little bit different motion sometimes, it seems, as lefty quarterbacks, and his is no point. I still think he will throw it, but I at some
point. The guy better be wide open.
But I think somebody has to make them add him needing to throw for that package. Until somebody makes it an irrelevant package and he has to throw, you're going to see it looking like this.
And I'm okay with that, Andy. I'm left-handed also. I want to see the lefty throw the ball. All right. One other issue we got to hit on, Andy. We've got to see a change at kicker, don't we?
You have. You can't be 1 for 4 from right around 40 yards, right? Like, you know, and this is Army kicking. You know, he missed left. He missed right against Illinois. Important points, not – I didn't ever feel that because of the missed field goals, Penn State was in trouble in this game. I really never felt that way. It's just, it felt more in Illinois' wheelhouse a little bit, but that's what my mind was telling me. Like, okay, these missed kicks have kept Illinois in this game. But then I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, Illinois has no say in the outcome of this game. That's how dominant Penn State was. The kicks didn't impact the final result. They just kept Illinois around a little bit longer, but yet you can't be that consistently inaccurate from 40 yards, 42 yards, 43 yards, whatever. And it's army kicking left, right. He can kick it a mile. It's just those, you know, goalpost things are a bit of a bugaboo. I think you have to take a look. And I understood why James Franklin went for it on fourth down. I'm like, a buddy of mine started texting me, what is he doing? And I'm like, I wouldn't send my kicker out there. Now, later in the game, James did, right? After they didn't make that fourth down. And later he's like, okay, I'm going to send him back out. He missed. And I was like, yeah, you can't send him out there. You have to go for it. And I thought it was, you know, the right decision, because I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure I'd send my kicker out there either. I don't feel like he can make a 36-yarder because he can't make a 42-yarder. What's the difference? So I think the kicking game might force Penn State's hand offensively. We'll see if it costs them, but they have to look elsewhere. They do. They absolutely do. You're 100% right.
And I know James talked in terms of he won the job in practice, but at what point do you have to start using what happens in the game as part of your calculation? And if you got a guy, I know you're a golfer, Andy. To me, the analogy is you got a guy who can hit it a mile, but he can't hit the fairway.
Yeah, no, you might have won the job in practice, but you lost it in your performance.
They have to go elsewhere, and I think the UCLA game is the place where, hey, I want to see that other guy kick the ball. I want to see them kick it successfully, because the following week against USC, a missed field goal could cost you a game. So I want to see that change made here, Andy. All right, that's it for quarter number two. Stay tuned. We've got Ask Andy coming up next.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. We all know what that means. It's time to take your questions and ask Andy. If you want to send a question in for Andy, real easy, just download our app, search on Keystone Sports, wherever you get your apps. You'll see us. You'll see Keystone Sports. Download it, and you'll see the Ask Andy button. That is what John from Estero, Florida did. He says this is his first time question, Andy. And he says, as well as Penn State was running the ball, why did we try a pass on fourth down to Fleming? I know if it works, it's genius, but we have Catron Allen back there.
Yeah, 4 yards is the sticky number, right? I think it was a fourth and four. Am I right, Jimmy?
Yeah, it was three fourth or four. Three or four, Andy.
Yeah, 4 yards. I thought it was four. Maybe it was three. It was the right play call. It was just the wrong execution by the wide receiver and the quarterback. I didn't have a problem with the play call. I think in that situation, Illinois is expecting Catron Allen to get the ball and are ready for that. And 1 or 2 yards is about you. 3 and 4 yards is a little about what the defense is telling you they're committed to trying to eliminate. I like the play call. I just think Julian ran a bad route, and I think Drew threw a pass probably too wide for him to do anything other than what he did. You have to run that 3 yard route to the stick or beyond it, and he clearly ran it a yard short, and Drew threw it outside a little wide, just a wee bit wide, and gave him no opportunity beyond 2 yards that he got.
Well, I think the other part of this play, Andy, was I think this is one where you give Illinois some credit here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they brought people. They were blitzing. I think Julian Fleming was the hot receiver. I think the blitz came from Drew Aller's right.
It did.
And Julian Fleming became the hot receiver, and Drew Aller had to get rid of the ball quickly.
Yeah.
So I forgive is the wrong word. I think I understand why Fleming wasn't beyond the sticks at that point. And, you know, because Drew Aller had to get rid of it quickly. Because I've also seen some people talk about I don't know if it was Tyler Warren, but somebody was open deep. But I think he had no time. He had to get rid of it quickly to the hot receiver very quickly. I think this is a case, Andy, where on that play, I'm going to give Illinois credit because they rushed Drew Aller. They made him quicker than he wanted to be. He released it quickly as he had to. And then a defender was there to tackle Julian Fleming before he reached the line to gain.
The only last thing I'll say, and it's a good question, John. It's a good observation, John, in Florida. Here's the thing. When they came off the field, I'm pretty sure everything from a coaching standpoint, and then they were watching film, good job, good job, good job. Everything you'd want them to do every single time moving forward, go to the hot route, read it quickly, understand the blitz is coming, give yourself a chance. On a 4th-and-3 or 4 play, they did everything that you'd want them to do again. And so that's okay. I kind of agree with you. I'm like, it's okay. They just didn't make the yard that they needed. No big deal. Execution in terms of the little devil in the details is why they didn't get the first line. But overall, big picture, pat on the helmet because both guys did everything right.
I think so. I think this is a more congratulate Illinois for doing a good job defensively, Andy. And also, I think there were a couple other plays that I would have questioned perhaps a little bit more on the play calling, you know, when they had like 6 or 7 yards to go and they used the Tyler Warren package. I'm not sure about that. But I really think in the grand scheme of things, it's a bit nitpicking, you know, 1 or 2 plays, because I think overall Andy Kotelnicki is calling a great game. And the other point that John made in his question was, he said, I know if it works, it's genius. Well, I think that's part of it. Sometimes you can call the right play and it just doesn't work out. And you can't always just say, you know, it was like our conversation about Tyler Warren. If whenever he's in as the Wildcat quarterback, all he does is run the ball up the middle, people are going to know that. And it's why I think even if they never throw out of that package again, they at least showed in the Kent State game that it's a possibility and the defense has to respect it, Andy. So you can't always do this the exact same thing. Let's move on. Yep. Let's go to Rob in Columbus, Georgia. And Rob says, this is maybe a question for Jim as a longtime fan. Ooh. Can you name a team who has had more touchdowns taken off the board over ticky-tack penalties? I think Penn State has some sort of record in that department.
Ticky-tack penalties taking points off the board. You know, it's not something – so if I'm thinking back on the spot here, if I'm thinking back to the James Franklin era, I'm thinking the last 10 years, and I don't have a feeling of James Franklin coach teams having a ticky-tack. You know, you're going to have a play or two here every couple games that are going to hurt you because the game's played by young men and human beings, and we make mistakes. However, I don't remember it being an inherent problem with their overall production as a football team. I don't think penalties are something that grab me as, you know, one thing under Franklin is, you know, this team shoots itself in the foot a lot with penalties. That's not something I think I've ever thought or said under his tenure at Penn State.
And the statistics bear that out, Andy. They typically, James Franklin teams do not have a lot of penalties, which is why I think this year is standing out a bit. And, you know, Rob uses the term ticky-tack. I'm going to say unnecessary. You know, we've seen those offsides penalties. We've seen the late hit penalties. We've seen, and the play he's referring to was the on the interception return for a touchdown, the block in the back. Yeah. Not necessary. He didn't need that block. And it was, you know, he hustled back to get there and had the block in the back, but, and the whole play was in front of him. You know, as fans, we could watch it on TV and start going, no, no, don't do that. Don't do it. Don't do it. oh, he did it.
Yeah.
And that's the awareness you want to see from your players that they didn't show there. All right. Let's go to Steve in Columbia, PA, who says, will someone tell Andy Kotelnicki he is coaching at Penn State and not some scrub team like Kansas? We have superior talent than every team we play other than USC and Ohio State this season. Please quit the cutesy stuff and run the darn ball. We could have run for 300 yards against Illinois. The O-line looked great. Use them and number 10 and 13, for God's sakes. Your thoughts.
Steve, they're not a three-yard and a cloud of dust offense. I couldn't disagree with you more. They're still using the running backs. They're just using it as the baseline of their offense. I love the way Andy Kotelnicki is coordinating this offense. I love the way he is using the two running backs as a running game and an anchor for this offense. But it is not a running, exclusively running-based football team. I like all the eye candy because it really tests the defense discipline in terms of, you know, what they're seeing and what they're thinking and what how they're going to react. I think if Penn State were to just line up and try and be a quote-unquote running team, that you would be hamstringing this offense, especially with the talent you have at the quarterback position, the tight end. Your wide receiver one's a weapon. You have a deep threat that you can employ every now and then. You've got a Bo Prabula package. Now you have a Tyler Warren package. The thing for Andy is, how do I juggle all this and make it balanced? I think he's found a sweet spot. I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah, it's still centered around those two really good running backs, but it's not all about those two really good running backs. That's hard to do, I think. So, sorry, Steve. Disagree with you vehemently.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, next long email he sent, address it to Andy.
Yeah, so, head
but
to me.
Here's the point I think you got to understand, Steve, is Penn State ran the ball 44 times.
Yeah.
They threw it only 21. They did emphasize the run. They did emphasize the running backs. And I suspect Steve is probably looking at a couple plays, probably the same play John from Estero, Florida was looking at when they threw the ball to Fleming and asked why didn't they give it to Catron Allen. I suspect a single play like that or two is what is influencing Steve's question there. All right, let's go to Jason in Harrisburg, who says, Andy, why do you think the defense starts games so poorly?
Ooh, loaded. I do think I have an answer for it. They're still finding their way right out of the gate. They find their way in the game better. So that's the one difference between the defense last year and the defense this year. From snap one, this defense was dominant in a game, right? This defense, which has replaced a lot of moving parts, and those moving parts mostly went to the NFL, right, Jimmy? They've replaced a lot of moving parts, and they moved some parts around a little bit. So they are not going to be that dominant defense from snap one. However, their in-game progress from where they start to sort of where they end up, maybe, you know, middle, late third quarter and through the fourth quarter, through four games, pretty darn impressive. When you go from where you started to where you are finishing in the course of a game, they're going to get better at the beginning of the games just because they're getting more salt and pepper on them. They're getting a better understanding. Remember, this is not Manny Diaz's defense. This is Tom Allen's defense. Even for the experienced guys, a little bit different, a little bit new. Plenty of moving new parts that were replacing NFL talent. It's just a little bit of a growing pain, but for them to be able to, then they, as the game moves on, they bloom and show you, okay, well, this is what we are. After we get a little, you know, we get our feet wet and figure it out. They're going to get better at starting because they're become so proficient at finishing.
All right, Andy, that is going to have to be it for quarter three and Ask Andy. When we come back, a tradition we've been starting, Andy, I'm going to respond to your last answer and ask Andy when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. Andy, our last question was about the Penn State defense. It came from Jason in Harrisburg. He said, asked, why did the defense start so poorly? And I want to point out a couple things. First of all, obviously, we're looking at two games, you know, Bowling Green and Illinois. Give a little credit to the opponent. I think they both came in with a game plan and were very ready and executed very well in those first drives. The defense then in both games really stiffened. In Bowling Green, it took till like halftime. After that first drive, Illinois did not score again. And probably the turning point, I think, in the Illinois game, and want to know if you agree, Andy, Illinois has the ball on the two-yard line in the second quarter. The fans erupting, bad snap, and that ended in a missed field goal from Illinois. And from that point on, Penn State's defense was dominant.
So that play before the end of the half, and they had already found their footing right before that. It's just Illinois had gotten themselves in position to maybe take a lead before the half. They did it in the West Virginia game too. Remember, West Virginia had all those snaps in Penn State territory the first half and had 6 points to show for it. Here's Illinois at the 2 yard line in the dying, you know, minutes of the first half with a chance to take the lead into halftime. And they turned the game over. They completely swung the game in Penn State's favor. It was already leaning that way. You could just feel it starting to lean that way. The Penn State defense just made sure it totally went that way. That was the tide that turned the game. Yeah, it was. They got some help, right? The bad snap was their first help, and then they took it from there.
It also feels like, Andy, to me, and we talked about this during the offseason, I think you talked about it, with new coordinators, it may take a few games for them to catch their stride. And I thought that this second half against Illinois was probably the best half that the defense has played so far. But just a couple observations that I want to get your take on. Second half so far this season through four games, Penn State's defense has allowed a total of 9 points in second halves this year. The other thing is it feels like the adjustment for Abdul Carter moving the defensive end, Abdul Carter had to adjust to it, and also Tom Allen had to adjust to Abdul Carter and how best to use him. It felt like in this game, now they talked about they would be moving him around game to game, felt like this Illinois game, they did it the most effective they've done all season. And the final item to this, Andy, is it felt like the Illinois game, the defense was the most aggressive it's been. There were plays where they were doing the Manny Diaz, seven guys up on the line of scrimmage, and you have no idea who and how many guys were coming, and that just wreaked havoc in the Illinois backfield. What do you say?
I say you go back to Bowling Green. That team dominated Penn State's defense for a half. Illinois had its way with Penn State's defense pretty much for a drive. One drive, Jimmy. And then what you saw in the second half of the Bowling Green, you saw a little bit more than three quarters up from the Penn State defense against Illinois. They got their footing quicker. They're getting better faster. I will say that. They might still struggle out of the gate a little bit. They got to get better in the first quarter. That's something they obviously know and are working on. But they, in two games, they adjusted and found their footing quicker. I think the way Tom Allen executed the defense second half of Bowling Green, it was more aggressive. It was more attack the quarterback. He couldn't do that in the first half because they were getting – that quarterback was throwing dimes, and the game was still – the offense was keeping pace, so it was still a close game. This was the same way. He started unleashing it earlier, still a close game. Tight game, why not go after him and have the defense make it? So that's what I'm going to say. Abdul Carter is coming. It's, you can see it building. It's very obvious to me, Jimmy. 19 tackles, 6.5 TFLs, 3 sacks, a forced fumble, and he's just getting started. This is 4 games of him learning something completely new. He's getting a little bit better in setting the edge as a run guy. Teams are still running at him. They're running at him with intention, and they're getting a little bit of hay. But they're getting a little bit less hay each and every time. He's fine, Jimmy. He's coming. He's building.
I think so too. And you know, we had to be careful that we didn't get impatient with him.
Correct.
I think he needed to adjust. And I'm going to reiterate, I think Tom Allen needed to adjust to this team in general, this defensive unit, and Abdul Carter specifically. And it felt like in that Illinois game, we saw that adjustment from Tom Allen, where I think he's going to be more comfortable now in being more aggressive right from the start, Andy.
So with Abdul, I think Tom has been doing it the smart way. He had to learn it too. You're 100% right. He's been kind of using Abdul a little bit less is more to let the kid sort of figure some things out. I think in the last half of the season, down the stretch, you're going to see a little more is less when it comes to Abdul Carter. That's just going to be the flip. It's going to be closer to, you know, what you might – he's not Micah Parsons, but he's really darn close. He's not, but he's close. And Tom's been patient enough to let that build. Fans want to see Abdul Carter blazing in from the edge off the beginning, right? Like going with his hair on fire, making mistakes, but making 2 or 3 big plays a game. That's not good enough for Tom. That's not good enough for Abdul. He's been building it slowly, the total package, and more or less is coming. I'm telling you. You're going to see it.
And you know what, Andy? We also saw where they were using Abdul Carter in different ways, where he's kind of like spying the quarterback, very effective. And the other thing I just want to point out, the play where he backed off the line of scrimmage and batted down a pass.
Yep.
If he doesn't do that, I think A.J. Harris gets an interception there. Just wanted to point that out. Not that I'm telling Abdul Carter not to bat down the ball. Just saying. All right, Andy, let's look forward a little bit. We've got UCLA coming in. First of all, just a little – your couple thoughts on UCLA. My thought is they're a bad team.
Yeah. So – it's the first meeting between UCLA and Penn State since 1968. I like history stuff. I think we were both alive, but last time these two teams played, but we were in single digits.
Yes, we were.
But they are. UCLA has one win. It's over Hawaii. I watched the second half of the Hawaii game, and that was a tractor pull to win that game. They've been blown out in their other three games, right? Their offense was just dreadful last week against Oregon. Statistically, I think they're the worst. If they're definitely one of the worst, they might be the worst now rushing game in the country. And Penn State's defense is one of the best against the run, allowing 2.3 yards per carry. So that's a bit of a problem for the visiting team from Los Angeles that's going to be coming to Beaver Stadium. They just don't have any firepower, right? Like they don't have any pop. They're propped up by their defense, right? Like their defense kept them in the game with Oregon last week. I watched some of the game and I'm like, yeah, this offense is just dreadful. They have no say in the outcome of this game, but it wasn't easy for Oregon to light up their defense, right? So defensively, their defense is carrying all the water up the hill for them. Their offense is not even helping. They're hurting. And in some respects, they look like they're playing worse with each passing week offensively than maybe taking a small baby step in the other direction. So it's they're playing UCLA at a, catching UCLA at a good time, because I don't know how you don't fix what it was clearly, you could see, was broken against Oregon last week. You don't fix that in a week. They're still got a tough defense, though. They carry the water up the hill for them and make it difficult for the opposition to keep the scoreboard clicking quickly.
Andy, who was UCLA's quarterback in last time Penn State played him?
Oh, geez. I have no idea, Jimmy. 68. Before Donahue, right, Terry? I don't know.
Was that Gary Beben?
Could be.
He was either done 67 or 68, so can't remember. I think he won the Heisman.
Maybe. My Heisman knowledge doesn't go back to 68. I can go through the 70s, but 68 was, you know, I'm old, you know, nearly six decades ago, Jimmy. I'm just going to say that out loud.
That was the OJ era at USC. But anyway, for UCLA, this is not only are they going to be overmatched, Andy, but they're making the cross-country trip.
Right.
They're playing. It's going to be a noon kickoff Eastern time, which means – their body clock's going to say it's 9 a.m. They're going to be up real early by their body clock to get ready for this. It has a chance to be pretty ugly, real tough for the Bruins coming into town. All right, Andy, we need a prediction and a bold prediction from you.
So I think you're going to see, a lot of the same from Penn State offensively and what they want to accomplish and how they're going to approach this game that you saw last week. I'm looking forward to that. Doesn't sound like some of our listeners are. They want more simplicity out of Penn State. I think you're going to get a little variety, and I think you're going to get a little more shot. I think Penn State can take a few more chances, because I don't think UCLA is nearly as balanced as Illinois, what Illinois brought to the table. I don't think UCLA can keep this game close, although I think for a half, it might be a game. My prediction is Penn State 45, UCLA 10. I think there's some deep shots to be had, and there's a big play or two to be had from Penn State from one of its other focus guys, either Drew Aller throwing to Tyler Warren for a couple touchdowns, Nick Singleton breaking a run, Catron Allen, you know, hitting a 36-yarder, for example, on a, you know, third and two play, for example. I just think there's some big chunk yardage to be had for Penn State. My bold prediction is Drew Aller throws for four or more touchdowns in this one. He's got eight touchdowns in four games. So that's an average of two. So I'm going to go with four. Is that bold? I think they're going to give a little bit more to Drew Aller to build on this offense.
I agree. I think they will give more to Drew Aller to do in this game. Because they got to be prepared for that. Andy, that's going to be the last word. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.